Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hi, everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That right there is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have a great Tuesday show for you today. You guys good? I forgot to ask. I have a little coffee everywhere. It's all over my pen. We had a little accident before the show started. That's the best way to...
Tighten up my little buddy. Good morning, Chris Carter. How are you doing?
Cigarette guy. Let's go.
Cigarette guy.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Oh, there's coffee everywhere.
Let's go.
Antonio Brown's helmet gate has reached a conclusion. It turns out that guy, CeCe, was right. We'll explain. Tom Brady still plans to play until he's 45, but we are going to start the show with the latest on Dak Prescott. The multi-million dollar question: how much does Dak Prescott actually want? The Pro Bowl quarterback reportedly turned down Dallas's $30 million per year offer because Dak wants to become the highest paid quarterback in the $40 million per year range, though conflicting reports dispute this. A lot of millions regardless. So, Nick, is there anything Dak Prescott can do to prove he is worth all of this money, whether it is 30 or 40?
A lot better is the way he could do it. $40 million is... There have been talks around the league for the last few months that could Patrick Mahomes, in a year or two, become the league's first $40 million a year player? Could he get a five-year, $200 million contract from the Kansas City Chiefs? And the only reason I bring up Patrick Mahomes is he's the only player that that's been bandied about regarding. And all he had to do to have that be a question was set NFL records and win league MVP en route to a 50-touchdown, 5,000. Yes, of course, that he would be with now we see Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers around $35 million per year.
Yeah.
You think in a year the top quarterback would be $37-ish million. In a year or two, could the top quarterback at that age be $40 million? Possibly. So, yes, the timing and the high-level production. So, for Dak, what he has going for him is the timing. He does not yet have going for him anywhere near the high-level production. So how could he be worth $30 million per year, which is reportedly now by multiple people being reported he turned down? Build on those final eight games that you saw the best version of Dak that we've seen since his rookie season, and add to that. Not just continue that. Not just continue the production of those last eight games. Those last eight games were good. They weren't top quarterback, top five quarterback in the league good. He would have to add some explosive plays to it. He would have to decrease some of the time he holds onto the ball that leads to some of those sacks. He would have to add his ability to make some high-level NFL throws. In short, he would have to improve drastically to, in my mind, be worth north of 30 and have to improve an absolutely unrealistic amount to be worth anywhere near 40 when Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and the best in the league are in the mid-30s.
But we should expect the same jump in the quarterback salaries that we've seen over the last 2 years. Salary cap will continue to go up. The revenue, the NFL, the business is very successful. That's why the money is there. Just like 2 years ago, we never thought there'd be someone making $35 million. No, but the truth of the matter is, Russell Wilson, and I don't know the exact number, but I guarantee you Russell Wilson asked for $37, $38 million. How do you know that? Because they settled on $35. And I know that there was some going back and forth in doing that. So, of course, Aaron Rodgers probably wanted $35 million at the time. All those. Carson Wentz, I guarantee he wanted $35 million before settling to the figure that he got to. So I'm not surprised that the money is there. And if you don't like the quarterbacks, and we're in an era where there's so many guys that can throw, there's so many guys that can put up 4,000-yard seasons, besides winning, that's the really only indicator for Dak as far as is he worth the money. In three seasons, only one quarterback has more wins than him in the regular season. That's Tom Brady. He's got 32. So that, to me, would justify wanting the $30 million salary. Right now, I don't like to say that people are overpaid, but if there was someone in the NFL that deserved $40 million, it would be Tom Brady. He would be the only one. But you're going to see in the next 24 months, there's going to be a quarterback that's going to get $40 million because the money is there. It's going to be a bargain to have a guy at $30
million. So that's interesting. So, yes, he has the second most wins behind Tom Brady. But would you put Dak Prescott in the same category as Russell Wilson, as Aaron Rodgers, maybe even as Carson Wentz, as far as talented quarterbacks?
Some people,
or does that not even matter?
Listen, some people can make the argument for Dak versus Carson Wentz. I've heard the argument. I understand there are some compelling points to it. To me, Dak does not pass the eye test versus Carson Wentz. No one would make the argument of him versus Aaron Rodgers, him versus Russell Wilson, him versus Ben Roethlisberger, him versus Matt Ryan, him versus the other top paid quarterbacks in football, let alone Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback anyone has ever seen. Like, to me, that is where the Cowboys are playing such a dangerous game, and where, if I were advising them, Dak has potentially given them an escape hatch here. If the Cowboys are offering him right around Carson Wentz money, and he's blanching at that, and he is asking for, even if you shoot for the moon, land in the stars type of thing, he's asking for north of Russell Wilson money, the Cowboys, without going back on their word, could credibly say, we did plan to re-sign Dak Prescott. We did plan to make him one of the five highest-paid quarterbacks in football, as we've said. But he is asking for a number we cannot make work right now, just like we feel Zeke is asking for a number we cannot make work right now. And Dak is under contract for $2.1 million this year. The franchise tag next year would be $26 million. You right now, without doing a thing, could have Dak Prescott on your football team for the next 2 years for less than $30 million, and to get at least 32 games of information before you have to make a really tough decision after year five about an extension or a second franchise tag. Dak, to me, has opened that door to where if the Cowboys want to walk through it, they can, and it's not reneging on their promises that they have made about extending Dak Prescott.
I doubt if they'll do that right there, because there's just too much risk. Because in that, if you have your franchise quarterback, he can get hurt. People say, well, he can get hurt with a long-term deal. Yeah, but then you're out searching for another quarterback. I just believe that Dak's going to get the deal signed before the season. Those last 2 weeks of the preseason is typically when these deals come. I know that we're getting rumors that, oh, man, he wants $40 million. I'm sure there's a deal out there to be made, all right? I'm sure that they're going to make that deal before the season starts, Jenna.
No, I was curious how ugly this could get. It seems like it got ugly with Ezekiel Elliott. I wonder if it can get ugly with Dak Prescott as well, none of which the Cowboys factored in at the beginning of the offseason.
I would say this. Dak's already there, and so he's not going to now leave. So it's not going to get ugly to that extent. There's only one quarterback negotiation that I can remember in the last decade or so, if we remove whatever's going on with Tom Brady in New England, that I would say got ugly, and that was Kirk Cousins in Washington. But that team didn't want him. They made that very clear. Like, they kept looking for reasons to move on from him. So I wouldn't expect this to get ugly unless the Cowboys took the route that I actually think they should take, which is let Dak play out this season.
Yeah, I don't think the Redskins didn't want Kirk Cousins. They just weren't ready to commit to him long term.
Sure.
Because you don't put the franchise tag with the types of dollars that they put in his pocket for 2 years unless you want a guy. Right now, we just can't commit the dollars long-term. But in that two-year window,
He made a bunch of money.
Rothy's are the everyday flats for life on the go. They're stylish, comfortable, and they go with everything from yoga pants to dresses and skirts. They've quickly become a must-loved, gotta-have-them brand thanks to their wide range of colors and patterns, with new ones launching constantly. And there's a zero break-in period. Since Rothy's are crafted using 3D knitting techniques and hand assembly, their seamless design means right out of the box comfort. Best of all, they're made from recycled plastic water bottles. That's right. Over 25 million water bottles have been diverted from landfills to make these gorgeous and sustainable shoes. Another major bonus, they're fully machine washable, so your pair will be fresh and ready every laundry day. Plus, Rothy's always come with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. There is no risk and no reason not to try. You'll quickly discover why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/cadence. Comfort, style, sustainability, these are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com. That's rothys.com/cadence today. Back here, first things first, we're joined by the dapper, well-dressed former Pro Bowl linebacker, Bart Scott.
What'd he do?
Did I do something to my hair?
You got some highlights with touch-ups. It's looking good today.
Well, between the two of you guys, I get more attention here than I get anywhere else over the course of my day, and I mean you two. Well, Nick just realized I've been sitting next to you right here. You said that our daughters can't.
I said none of the above. I said none of the above. I just don't want to hang out with you outside of work. I'd love for our kids to play together. When the Eagles gave Carson Wentz $128 million extension this offseason, Jenny,
yes,
you take it from here.
I will. It appeared they were all in on their franchise quarterback. We are happy to have you here, Bart. That despite the fact that Wentz has been plagued with injuries the last two seasons, that despite the fact that he had all of zero playoff appearances, but Carson Wentz pays no mind to all of that, says expectations are sky high, adding into this his fourth season.
It is what we expect around here. You know, it's the culture that we have. It's the expectations of this city and this fan base. Everybody knows that, but this culture of that coach sets first and then the leaders on this team, like, we fully expect to be playing late into the season. And it starts right here in training camp. And obviously on the personal side, like you said, I mean, I'm chomping at the bit to get my opportunity to play into January and everything as well.
Bart, there's a lot of optimism around this Eagles team on both sides of the ball. If there is a question, maybe it's on Carson Wentz and his health and durability. What has to happen for the Eagles to make a Super Bowl run this season?
Well, for them to make a Super Bowl run, this is the most talented roster, or one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. But last year, it was missing that thump. You know, they were able to get ahead in games. They brought DeSean Jackson back. It's going to stretch the field. It's going to make sure the safety has to stay high. They went out and got Malik Jackson. They have tremendous depth on the defensive side of the ball, bringing back Vinny Curry, who couldn't be successful in Tampa, but now they understand how to use him as a situational pass rusher. But I think the addition of Miles Sanders, Darren Sproles coming back, now they have some thump behind there, because what happens is when you get ahead of games, you can't always depend on Carson Wentz to continue to try and throw the football. You have to be able to take the air out of the football. And you think about what Jay Ajayi, really gave them. You think about what LeGarrette Blount gave them. Gave them that physicality in between the tackles with one of the best offensive lines in the game. So once you get up by two scores with this defense can pin their ears back, you have to be able to take the air out of the game and limit the possessions once you get up two scores. And I think if they continue to stick to that recipe that they had, and I know that we have a motivated Carson Wentz, because, you know, even though he's won a Super Bowl, he felt like he wasn't part of the run, because he wasn't the quarterback under center, and the elephant in the room was Nick Foles, and they still could have kept Nick Foles. They decided to move on and say, listen, these are the keys to the car, and we go as you go, Carson Wentz. So he has that chip on the shoulder. So I have a talented roster with a quarterback that has a chip on the shoulder. I think that's going to have a tremendous good season.
And you mentioned Miles Sanders and Darren Sproles, and I'll add another name, Jordan Howard, a player I didn't think Chicago should have let go, who I think will be their between the tackles runner. That's what he did for Chicago with Tariq Cohen doing more of the lightning as far as the thunder and lightning combo. For the Eagles to live up to what are very lofty expectations for the second straight season, because they had very high expectations last year. When you win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles, that's the expectations you're going to have. Yes, your first point is the most important one. Carson Wentz got to play 16 games, or at least very close. He, at the very least, has to finish the season healthy. Even if he gets dinged for a game or two during the year, the last 2 years he's not been able to finish the season healthy. I think an instant or near instant rapport with DeSean Jackson will give the offense an extra element that they have not had since Wentz has been there. And then on defense, when this team was at its best, Chris would always say it, their big people were better than your big people. Yes, that was their offensive line, and they still have a great offensive line. Jason Kelce is fantastic. The right tackle, Lane Johnson, is one of the best in the business. And we know Jason Peters, when healthy, I mean, he's a future Hall of Fame potential caliber player. But that D-line, no Michael Bennett. What they do is they, in the draft, they take Josh Sweat. I know he's a mid-round pick, but, man, he seems to have some freaky ability as far as coming off the edge. Mm-hmm. You mentioned bring back Vinny Curry. We know how good Fletcher Cox is. They bring in Malik Jackson to play alongside him. These are all moves that should make what was their strength, their Super Bowl winning season, their strength once again, which is defensive line rotation, getting after the quarterback, because I do think there are legitimate questions about the back half of the defense. Right. I think the defensive line's excellent. The linebacking core and secondary, you could pick apart. But those are the things that have to happen for this Eagles team to live up to the expectations a lot of people have for them, which is win that division, be in contention for the number one seed in the NFC, and to get back to a Super Bowl.
CeCe, we talk a lot about the same thing Bart said, that this is, some say, one of the most complete teams. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what's the identity of the Philadelphia Eagles come into this season? It seems like they're very good at all different positions, but who are they really? Where are they going to shine?
Well, that's a good question there. I think their identity has to be in their personnel. Because top to bottom, Howie Roseman, when you talk to people around the league, Howie Roseman is one of the best. And he has earned that right. After taking a back seat when Chip Kelly was there, they thought he was useless. Now that he regained his power, you can see that the way this roster is built, top to bottom, they have an emphasis on getting to the quarterback and protecting the quarterback. And you think their offensive line is one of the best in the business. They went out and fortified that, drafted the kid Dillard. Yeah. In the
first round. Traded up first to get round. Him.
So now they have a competent backup, or maybe move one of those tackles into guard to even fortify the middle of that line. So I would say their identity is, man, they got a good roster. And what is Carson Wentz's potential? If they're going to have a Super Bowl aspiration, Carson Wentz has to live up to being the first pick in the draft. Legitimate question on the secondary, as far as their corners, will their cornerbacks be stable enough the way they were in their Super Bowl run? Their secondary played fabulous as the season went on. Yeah. Middle linebacker Zach Brown, watch him coming over from Washington. Speed guy, can cover guys out of the backfield. And I believe also he has that type of attitude. He hadn't played in a lot of primetime games, but I know him from his days when he transitioned from college to the pros. I think he fits into that Eagles culture. But ultimately, it's about the guy they gave the big money to. Carson Wentz, his ability to be able to orchestrate Philadelphia, and can he stay healthy? Because I believe the weapons around him are the best that he's had since he's been there. But they need to give him some easy stuff. Yeah. Third downs. You don't have to throw the ball all the time. Let's put some thump in there with Jordan Howard. Also, Sproles coming out of the backfield. And every once in a while, I'm going to throw the ball to the guy in the history of the NFL that's been better than anyone else. That's DeSean Jackson. Excuse me. How many of those 60-yard touchdowns can they create, which make it easy for Carson? You can't always have 8, 10, 12 play drive. So let's get him some easy stuff as he goes into, to me, which I should be his prime, which I don't believe that he's reached yet, Bart.
Yeah, you talk about those easy throws as well, and the easiest throws for quarterbacks are up those seams, right? So now you're going to be able, with the addition of DeSean Jackson, that's going to take the top off the defense, draw the safety. Who's going to eat the most? Zach Ertz, who's the biggest mismatch, maybe the best pass catching receiving, or definitely top five in the league. But now Nelson Aguilar is able to go back to his natural position, slot, where he can be off the ball, where now you can't jam him off the line because now he's going to have a free release. I think it's going to open everything up. This roster is balanced. It has depth, and it can sustain injuries. You know, and you talk about the secondary. The secondary played a lot better in the playoffs. You know, they were giving up deep balls early in the game, you know, early in the season. But how do you do that? If you can't have elite defensive backs, you have to have pass rush, because now that allows you to keep too deep, and now you can make sure that you have help for everybody.
And one other point, you guys both mentioned Howie Roseman. Howie Roseman and the Eagles front office is quietly sitting there saying, Zeke, stay firm, man. You deserve to be the highest paid running back in the league. They look at that division. Washington is figuring out who their quarterback of the future is going to be. The Giants are figuring out whatever the hell they're figuring out.
Daniel Jones is great.
Right, they got – yeah, okay. They have one team that could compete with them in this division. It's Dallas Cowboys. And right now their best player is not in the United States of America. So right now they are hoping that stays the case for as long as possible.
Back here, Bart Scott. We're talking Antonio Brown. We're talking Helmetgate. Over the weekend, AB said he'd retire if he couldn't wear his old helmet. Even filed a grievance with the NFL. Well, yesterday, that grievance was denied. So did he retire, Bart? Did he? He did not. He walked that threat back, fully retracting his ultimatum. He even tweeted, while I disagree with the arbitrator's decision, I'm working on getting back to full health, and I'm looking forward to rejoining my teammates on the field. I'm excited about this season. Appreciate all the concerns about my feet. Bart, have the AB headaches just begun for the Oakland Raiders?
I think he's a bit of a diva, but listen, you know, we're there to cover everything that he says right now. He's the most interesting thing about the Oakland Raiders. Yeah, they're the most interesting. He's the most interesting thing about the Oakland Raiders. And I don't have any issues with him trying to figure out, hey, with my helmet. I understand that. I've been through that before, the old chin strap rule where you had to put two chin straps on. And, you know, my helmet actually later in my career was, if I would have played another year, it was outlawed. I think that they maybe should the better that these helmets get and the heavier they get, the more confidence that players get, and I think they lead with their helmet because they trust the equipment so well. I feel like if their helmets were worse, guys would take their head out of the tackles. But I understand he's had tremendous success, and there's going to be adjustment. He's got to figure out, you know, the right balance, how he likes to look through it, how he likes to put it on his chin and things of that sort. But, I mean, that's just A.B. being A.B., and it comes with the territory. You know, I played with players that was a bit of divas and attention seekers. The question for me is, can he produce? And what I'm more concerned with is his feet, not his helmet and his equipment that he's playing with right now.
Right. You said he's a bit of a diva. I would say that's a bit of an understatement. I think Antonio Brown has exhibited over the last 18 to 24 months the top end of the spectrum of erratic diva, I think, is a kind way to put it. Diva is not inherently a bad thing. What Antonio Brown has done repeatedly is damaging to his team, I would argue to his own personal success, to his career, and he's paid very little, if any, penalties for it. Chris made the point earlier, Antonio's focus was on getting paid. He forced his way out of Pittsburgh, and he got paid because of it. He got $30 million of guaranteed money that the Steelers were not going to give him that he got by forcing his way out of Pittsburgh. How'd he do that? Well, let the relationship sour with the quarterback. Some of that, obviously, was also on the quarterback. But then he no-showed, no-called on a must-win game when they were still alive for the playoffs. And then since then, in a 10-day stretch, he showed up for work in a hot air balloon, then couldn't work because his feet were frostbitten, and then threatened to quit work because he couldn't wear the uniform he wanted to wear, for lack of a better term. That's crazy. It's just crazy behavior. And so rich, successful people, famous in particular, at that age, don't all of a sudden reverse course. He's not all of a sudden going to become Larry Fitzgerald. No, of course not. And if anything, he's even more emboldened, even though the NFL finally told him no on this, or they were finally someone that told him no. His coach put his arms around him. The Raiders fans are putting their arms around him. They just want him to produce, to Bart's point. Why would he change his behavior when his behavior is worked out by his mind the exact way he wanted to? Didn't want to be in Pittsburgh anymore? He's not anymore. He had the owner meet with him on his terms. The owner flew to him to meet with him. Appreciate it, Mr. Rooney. Nope, I don't want to be here anymore. So, no, I think AB is a great player, and I think he's the most talented player on the Raiders, but I don't think that he is going to change who he is or who he has become. I think we'd be crazy to think he is going to.
I'm just here to explain Bart's answer, and there's a reason why Bart gave you the answer that he did, because 70% of the players in the locker room, they don't care, just like Bart. I don't care, man. I'm here for the work. I'm here to get paid. I'm making more money than I could ever dream of. You're going to either play ball, because I'm going to be here. I'm not involved in that, but I don't care. Another reason is because he's had teammates like that. In every NFL locker rooms, there's a certain amount of expectations, entitlement, diva-ness, and it's not always at the wide receiver. So Bart has seen this. But Bart also, the reason why it's accepting is the reason why Mike Tomlin accepted it. As long as you're one of the best at your position, we're willing to accept that behavior because we know it's an NFL locker room. So that's where Bart is coming from. To me, when you're transitioning from one team to the next, I would expect the opposite. Juju Schuster flamed him on the way out of town. So what type of mentor is he going to be to the younger guys? He's not. It's all about AB. It's all about his brand. It's all about Instagram. It's all about likes. It's not about being one of the best receivers that's ever played the game. It's not about putting together a six-year window that's like one other receiver in NFL history, and that's Jerry Rice. No, AB has switched. So for me, you won't hear me on TV bragging about he's the hardest worker in the building, because that was my excuse for him before. Now it should be about other things. And with the Raiders, their logo has been just win, baby. To him, it's not about winning anymore. It's all about himself and his own personal brand, and it will hurt the Raiders. And this is just the beginning,
it
Bart.
It also feels like, Bart, yeah, though, it's the perfect recipe to butt heads with a guy like John Gruden, who seemingly doesn't have an ounce of patience for this type of thing.
I think that's
they're the same person. You know, they're both alpha males. They're both high maintenance. You can make the same argument about John Gruden. That's why I think I don't know what you consider
your definition of an alpha male, and I don't know what John Gruden has done that would warrant whatever your definition is.
I mean, for me,
because for me, it's a bunch of BS.
Well, for me, it's a guy that, you know, understands when they have leverage, you know, and I think that John Gruden understands he has leverage getting Reggie McKenzie out there, making sure that he has nobody there more powerful than him. And you look on the player side, Antonio Brown is no player more powerful than him because of the contract, because of the financial security that they have. But I think when you look at Antonio Brown, I'm not concerned with how big of a diva he is, because through his own selfishness, the entire team can continue to thrive. You hear about the environment in which when he's out on the football field, he makes everybody better because he comes and he brings it every day. Some of the same things you can say about Odell Beckham. He's a guy that's performed at a high level. Double team, triple team, it don't matter. He's going to show up. You know, I can't really hold this against him as far as his feet and not being available right now, because, you know, we've all, you know, tried to do different things and try and improve ourselves and go through technology. The fact that he didn't have the proper, you know, protection for his footwear isn't his fault. He was trying to do something to make himself recover to be a better football player. But what he's got to do, he's got to take some of those young guys underneath his wing.
That's
he's got to start to develop the guys around him.
That's the concern, right, is that I would imagine if you are on the cusp of being a Super Bowl champion, if you're on the cusp of being a great team, and you have a really strong locker room with really strong veterans, with an established coach, quarterback, you bring in AB, and it's like, listen, we know we brought in a guy who's a little erratic. He's going to be awesome on Sundays. We're going to deal with the other stuff, and we're not asking him to mentor guys. They are in the opposite position. They are trying to position themselves, not even for this season that hasn't even started yet, for next season. They're trying to figure out if Carr is going to be their quarterback once they get to Vegas. They're trying to figure out which of these young players. They got a bunch of first-round picks coming through the door this year and next year because they traded away those players to get first-round picks. Part of Antonio Brown's job, in theory, would be to show the young receivers how you conduct yourself as a professional, because that's how you're going to help the Raiders long-term more so than this
year. They made interesting choices trying to do this between Incognito and bringing in Perfect as model citizens in that locker room.
But I don't care, like, who you are as a person, right? When you're trying to show me how to be a professional, I want to see how you look at film. I want to see how you break down defensive backs. But I don't care how the method you do it. I want to watch you work, because a lot of guys talk good.
But during the film session, he's checking the Chase app, seeing how rich he is, and he's on Instagram.
You don't get that good unless you put in the work on the field and in the classroom.
Let me tell you something, man. I played that position. It's the most selfish position in all of sports. And you can be selfish, you can be a diva, and still be great. We have examples of them, one after one, decade after decade. So I don't believe you in that. And making the excuse that, you know something, just because he's a hard worker, man, you're in a team sport. He tweeted, me and my team, I'm getting back with my teammates. It's about the team. But this has been about him in Pittsburgh. At the end, it became about him. Facebook Live, that was about him. The stuff of Ben Roethlisberger, it was the stuff about him. We need to stop making excuses. He's not a 24-year-old. You know something? Oh, it's his second or third year. No, dude is grown. Dude is in the league, and he's being irresponsible with his stardom. And for me to sit here and act like I'm going to tolerate it? No, Bart. And you know in the locker room, it's disruptive. You create a culture with the guys you pay. You don't bring in no Vontaze Burfict talking about you trying to be a mentor. You don't bring in no Richie Incognito talking about you getting ready to mentor someone. But you don't, Bart.
But you know they're not all choir boys. They're not all choir boys. I don't need choir boys. I need some guys with some skin in the game, some felonies. I need some bad guys, right?
But
I can win with
top three draft picks for crazy.
No, stop this.
In the league.
That used to win in the league. It's not winning anymore, Bart. All right? Look what the winning model is. It's not guys getting arrested off the field. So, yeah, that used to work. There used to be a day. You used to be able to have guys like that. But it doesn't work anymore. You're not winning.
Philly
the careers
won with
are
LeGarrette
not
Blunt, right? They won with LeGarrette Blunt. But you can win with guys that
you
can
win when you go to New England.
With.
That's the only team transforming people, because the dudes don't act crazy. You know something? They act straight as soon as they walk through the door, because they ain't having it, because they know Belichick is not putting up with it in the locker room. They not putting up with it. Ain't no Instagram live in the Patriots locker room.
Yeah, but for me, that whole hiccup was about him trying to brand and market himself, and he made a bad decision.
Come on, man. You're making money. You're making almost $20 million.
Yeah.
You're branding enough. Stop, Bart.
No,
like,
man.
Stop. Go, Jenna.
We
stop.
All try to make that off.
Just stop,
money.
Man.
We're going to take a break.
Stop. You're making excuses, man.
Bart, we'll see you a little bit later coming up.
It's ridiculous.
Come on back
Cam
with this
Newton
segment. I need
Panthers.
To start taking stuff to CT.
Next
he pointed all his hands and gyrations all over the place.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
We'll get to Cam Newton in just a second, but first, some minor league baseball. Justin Turner of the Springfield Cardinals making a great catch, takes him over the wall.
That's a home run. Change the rule, Manfred.
No. Come on.
You got to keep your body in this field of play.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a touchdown. Like, once you go on the other side and you touch the ground, you should be out.
And that ended the game, I'm told.
All right, how about this? You can tell me this one shouldn't count. Next up, internet dunker Isaiah Rivera. Boy, with you, nothing counts.
I mean, through the legs. I know this might shock you, Jenna. That would be an odd defensive stance. This was not in a game. This was in a warm-up.
Defense was terrible on this play.
I've seen Nick Wright play basketball. He plays defense like that.
Oh, how dare you? I'm a great defensive player.
Last two times you played basketball, you left bleed.
I did because of that hard defense, man.
Five-star class of 2020 guard Josh Christopher. One counted.
Man, I miss going to the Drew League when we were in L.A. I'm told this young man dropped a nice little 40-10 on him during this game. But by the way, the tall white fella right there, either get out the way or contest. You can't just let the other guy go contest. He beats you off the dribble, and then you just watch someone else contest. Oh, wait. Oh, what do I do? Okay, I'll just watch. Come on, man. You got your friend posterized.
You break down the film, like, to the white guy, like you're not white.
No, I just I was pointing him out. I didn't know his number. Okay, I didn't know how else to just – there was only one white fella on the court. It was an easy way to differentiate.
I got you.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Ravens
I don't appreciate you talking about my race like that, Chris.
Whiteout Michael Floyd jumping over the defender to make a nice two-handed grab, guys. Break this down.
Michael Floyd trying to resurrect his career there. Lost his burst down the field. He used to be a burner when he came into the league out of Notre Dame. Had some off-the-field issues. Has gotten cut the last several years by a number of teams. Can he resurrect his career there with Baltimore? I don't think so.
All right, let's talk some Carolina Panthers. Good news for Carolina. Cam Newton looking healthy, showcasing a new throwing motion after shoulder surgery. Christian McCaffrey coming off a career year, second year wideout. DJ Moore thinks if their offense is, quote, hitting on all cylinders, it's going to be scary. Bad news, though, still playing the NFC South. Oof. So, Nick, can the Panthers dethrone the Saints in that division?
Oh, I want to say yes so badly. Because I really think the Panthers are going
to
be good. And last year, I think they were good until Cam got his shoulder wrecked. And we'd look at that season differently last year if the J.J. Watt hit had just not Cam out for the year. They were 5-2. T.J. Watt. Thank you.
Yeah, hit him like J.J.
Absolutely right. J.J.'s younger brother. If the T.J. Watt hit had just not Cam out for the year, and then they lose 7 straight games, like, oh, this was a really promising team. Quarterback got hurt.
Yes.
But instead, Cam played through it. And we didn't really get the extent of the injury till after the season. So it's like, wow, really disappointing year for Carolina. But no, I don't think they can. I think to win that division, you're going to need 12 wins. Last year, the Saints got 13. So 12 wouldn't have even gotten it done. I do think they'll be better. I think the Gerald McCoy addition is one of the best additions anyone made all offseason.
Yes.
And unlike getting Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham or some of the other star players that changed teams, they didn't have to give up anything. They didn't have to go trade for him. They just went out and got Gerald McCoy, and it just cost you dollars, not personnel. So I love that addition. I know you love their defensive coordinator. McCaffrey was almost 1,000 last year, joining Roger Craig and Marshall Faulk as the only people to do it. He came like 125 yards short, I think, or maybe even less than that. And so I think that they are poised to get to double-digit wins, poised to win the division. I mean, the Saints would have to take a 3 or 4-win step backwards in order for that to happen.
Yes, I've had a number of conversations with Eric Washington. He's a defensive coordinator. I met with him when we were in Cleveland for the All-Star game. He was there with his family. We've become good friends. So, yes, their defensive personnel, he is very excited about it, excited that they're going to get more back to what they used to do, where there will be multiple fronts. Last couple years, they've been a 4-3 front. Look for them now, Dontari Poe, to be at the nose guard, for them to play a little more 34 with Gerald McCoy. And you mentioned some of those other free agents. Not only did they not have to pay for a guy as far as draft picks and draft capital, but you're talking about a natural fit, a born leader, a guy who brings great chemistry into the locker room. He's a grown man. He's very, very responsible, great locker room guy. And they believe, with their support and cast, their defense and their linebackers, that they can free him up, and he should be able to play at a level that he even couldn't even reach in Tampa because of the personnel. Big question marks have to be with their secondary. Can their young corners hold up? When Carolina's good, their corners have played good. But as far as DJ Moore, I do believe he is the franchise replacement as far as from Steve Smith. When they moved on from him a number of years ago, they've never had anyone that could be that number one guy. Him and Curtis Samuel, number one and number two. Watch how many times they give them the ball at the line of scrimmage or handoffs, because both of them have great open field running ability, and they're going to take advantage of that this year.
So how important is that wide receiving core going to be to the success of this team? Three of the last 4 years, their number one target was either a running back or a tight end. It wasn't a wide receiver. Now you have two guys who really want to get in there and be a part of the offense. Ron Rivera said he wants them to be part of the offense. How important is that going to be?
I think that's a really interesting note, Jenna, and one I didn't know till you had mentioned to me before the show, that three of the last 4 years, the most targeted player was not a wide receiver. Now, Greg Olsen, when healthy, is a very, very good player, and we know that Christian McCaffrey is a dynamic dual threat. But I think that's been more out of necessity than it's what they've wanted to do. I think they've targeted the tight ends and running backs so much because they haven't found a replacement for Steve Smith. Mm-hmm. Steve Smith ain't been a Panther in a long time. And, I mean, he has since played for another team and retired and now does television. And they've been trying to replace him. Spent a first-round pick on Kelvin Benjamin. That didn't work. Spent a second-round pick on Curtis Samuel. Thus far, the returns have been minimal. Spent a first-round pick on DJ Moore. He is the most promising of all the guys they've tried.
Don't forget Funchess, too. He also went over to Indianapolis.
Absolutely. Devin Funchess, another guy they spent a high draft pick on who was good but clearly not a number one in this league. If DJ Moore can be a legitimate number one, if he can take the success of last season, build on it, and become a guy that could get you 100 catches, that could get you 1,100 yards, then that gives this offense really a special dynamic that it has not had since Cam has matured into the quarterback that he is now.
The two backups, Jarius Wright, he was very, very effective, especially two seasons ago when Minnesota made that run. And watch out for Chris Hogan. He should fill that roster, give them someone who is a consistent route runner in the outside. But a lot of this development depends on these two young receivers. DJ Moore, can he be the number one threat? Ultimately, he should lead the team in targets. If he doesn't get that this year, I believe it's next year, because McCaffrey coming out of the slot is a nightmare for linebackers, safeties. He has a mismatch going into every game. No matter what game is on the schedule, I don't believe there's someone out there that can be able to cover him all over the field. He's a special, special wide receiver. So, yes, their wide receiving core, I believe, is one of the better. Young and explosive, but their ability to be able to catch the ball and run with the ball, that's where they're special. So let's watch how North Turner, Scott Turner, their coordinator, quarterback coach, what they dial up with Cam with his new throwing motion early in the season to be able to take advantage of that skill set.
And you mentioned McCaffrey out of the backfield being a matchup nightmare. We've talked a lot about, and I know you've talked with Dusty, our statistician, a lot of teams this preseason going to more two tight ends, going to more heavier formations.
Yes, absolutely.
The Panthers have a unique opportunity if they have Ian Thomas, who they spent a mid-round pick on last year at tight end, on the field with Greg Olsen and McCaffrey out there, that if you go heavy against them, they can have, we know Olsen's deadly as a pass catcher. You just talked about McCaffrey. And if you don't match up with that personnel, McCaffrey, I think, has shown he can be a between-the-tackles runner. He can, maybe not 30 carries a game between the tackles, but that they can present some of those matchup issues that the Patriots presented with teams last season with letting your defensive personnel dictate which offense they wanted to run.
Every season we have a handful of like dark horses, teams that they were just right there close, but we didn't give them enough attention in the offseason. Carolina fits that bill to me because I believe defensively they're going to be really nasty, and Cam being healthy, you know, that's nightmares for the rest of the
league. Well, that's it. That offense all predicated on how Cam Newton does indeed play and how he feels. All right, take a break. Back here, Bart Scott talking Tom Brady. The 42-year-old quarterback set to become a free agent at the end of the season, even put his Boston area home on the market. All signs pointing to this perhaps being Tom's last season with the Patriots. But Brady said, hey, don't read into my house sale, and let's just focus right now on football.
If anything, the Patriots have taught me, it's, you know, being in the present and not resting on what's happened in the past and certainly not worrying about what's happening in the future. You know, I'm excited to get out there and play this year and do what I hope to do for this team, which is be a great leader, be a great example, be a great player. And then beyond that, I mean, it's not really, there's just too much work to be done between now and next season. So there's no point really worrying about it. That's how I feel.
All right, it's become almost the elephant in the room, but what are expectations for now Tom Brady, Bart, at age 42?
They're what they always are. To win a Super Bowl, they'll win the division again. I think the Jets are a couple of, about a year away. They're going to play well. They don't beat themselves. And Tom Brady, at this point, he's like a Jedi, right? He's doing more things more with his mind than he actually has to do with his body. But you do talk about how hard he works on his mechanics. Mm-hmm. He's a professional, kind of reminds me of Dirk Nowitzki back in the day. I remember when they were playing the Heat, and they would say that, you know, after the game, Dirk would go put up 200 shots with his shot coach. You know, because Tom Brady is so smart and he's still working hard and he still loves the game, I think he's going to play at a high level. I think this team is starting to make a transition where they're going to be more like the teams that Tom Brady had at the beginning of his career, not that he had at the end, because you see they're starting to load up on defense, bringing back Jamie Collins, putting in Michael Bennett so that they can win those ugly games. Last year, they were something totally different offensively, where they ran, you know, the ball the majority of the time and limited the possessions, and Tom only had to be great at the end of the year, you know, at the end of the game. Sony Michel is somebody that I think is going to take a lot of pressure off his back. This year, I look forward to seeing Sony Michel in the passing game because he was coming off of that injury, you know, from college. And now yes. I think you're going to get great more point. Of him, a more complete, because it was kind of running back by committee. Whenever White was in, you knew it was a pass. Whenever any other guys were in, yeah. Burkhead, you knew it was going to be a run. Now I think they're going to keep you on your toes.
I like your breakdown.
A little better.
I'm on
the trash back.
A little bit better. A little bit better. You're trying to recover from the last segment. If you weren't with us, Bart was garbage in
he
the last
was
one.
Excellent.
But he's trying to recover.
Fresh from Miami.
But the thing about Tom is, and I love the fact in the soundbite, New England taught me how to not worry about next season, not trying to look back to what we did last season, but what we need to do now. Every team, every year in New England is totally different. I believe they're going to be a defensive team. The Jamie Collins name bringing up, I believe, is very important, because what they did from week 16 on last year, they just mauled people. Mm-hmm. Offense and defense. They went back to an 80s, 90s style. We're going to run it. And defensively, we're going to get after your quarterback through stunts, blitzes. We just believe that we're better schemed up than you are. If they have Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins at middle linebacker, they got 500 pounds at middle linebacker. So they're going to take you out of your run. And they are great blitzers for linebackers, because most of the running backs, 215 to 230. The linebacker gets a running start, they can run them straight over. So Belichick, to me, is going back to his old playbook. Tom knows that. They don't have a bunch of weapons on the outside. If they have to win a game, it's going to be by four corners. We're going to win it by special teams, playing smart football. We're just that much better at the X's and O's than teams. That's the way Tom tries to get back to his fourth straight Super Bowl, Nick.
And the Jamie Collins addition is a really interesting one, because he was traded midseason. During a season, he made an all-pro team because, according to reports out of New England, he was doing his own thing too much.
Freestyle.
Right. He was freelancing. He was not doing your job.
He left, right?
Say it again.
Got that humble pile when he left.
Right. He traded him to Cleveland, and now he comes back to the Patriots. They obviously assume that he will continue doing the things he does well while not freelancing to try to do his own thing. But the point you mentioned about Brady, that the mental part of the game is easy for him now. He said something similar in this radio interview, which is a really good spot, which was, he said the hard part for him is getting his body ready for the season. Because when he was asked about it, do you still want to play till you're 45? He said, yeah, that hasn't changed. But what is hard for me is getting ready physically. He said mentally, and it was kind of interesting, he said mentally, game's easy for me now. But for Brady physically, three straight Super Bowl appearances means three straight seasons with three extra games, three straight seasons where the season goes a month later than other people.
Where you have the shortest
three straight
off
seasons
season.
Where you have the shortest off season. And so Brady dealing with that is a big part of what you expect from him this season.
If you look how easy it was for him to get to the Super Bowl, once they transitioned to week number 16, all he was doing was handing the ball off. Yep. He threw a couple passes in the fourth quarter. Tom Brady was not great in their little stretch run. Edelman was spectacular in the Super Bowl, and Gronk was very good late. But it was their running game, their running backs, and their defense. And this is the type of team that they're going to have this year. Tom does make a great point back to what you're saying. It's not being in the locker room with the guys. It's not once you make it to the regular season. Because I remember the day when I went to the field in South Florida. It was 98 degrees and humidity was in the 90s. And I remember calling my ex-wife at the time and saying, I don't know how much longer I can do this. It's not run out there for 70,000. Right. It's not I'm getting ready for a game. I don't know how much longer. And I remember training that day, and I could feel my heartbeat and my pulse in my temple. And it felt like I was getting ready to pass out. And it's like, how much longer do you want to push this? And that becomes the battle, man, when you get to that point as far as season. Because with 30% turnaround in the league, look at the defense he had to face in the AFC Championship. Who wouldn't want to play against them a whole bunch of games in Kansas City?
First time this year, banana in the tailpipe, man.
I was just going to say, so how successful can Tom Brady now be as a game manager if we see him sort of transitioning into that from the quarterback?
Well, we see Drew Brees. He's a game manager. That's what you do now when you get these quarterbacks at advanced age, is you got to take a little bit off their plate. Because what happens is, as a great player, you can always be great, but can you be consistently great? And they don't want to ask him to be great the entire game. They don't expect him to carry it the entire game. We look at John Elway. He wasn't great. They turned around to Terrell Davis, let him do his thing. Then when we need you to be great in those special parts where you can use
Peyton
your mind.
Manning at the end.
Yeah, let's do that. Because if anything's going to break down first, and if it ever breaks down, it's going to be the end of him, it's going to be his lower body. If his lower body ever breaks down, he won't be able to be as accurate as he's been. And if he can continue to stay healthy and save himself, put him on that work management, that load management that you hear these other athletes on, then you only ask him to be great, you know, at the end of the season.
Tom Brady, the reason why he should be a great game manager, because that's how he got started.
Yep.
He perfected game manager that they allowed him to start throwing the ball. He got so good. It's like, okay, wow, we need to give you more on your plate. He worked on his arm strength. He worked on his anticipation. So now, Tom Brady, to me, being the greatest quarterback, but also he's one of the few that's absent of ego. He doesn't have to throw the ball 50 times like Aaron Rodgers. If they don't throw it 50 times, Aaron Rodgers afterwards is like, we should have thrown the ball more. So he would be the great game manager at this stage of his career because of all the things he's been taught there.
And it's really interesting just from a sports storyline perspective. If you look at Tom Brady's career almost as a circle that starts out great defense, running game, game manager.
Yep.
Halfway through 2011-ish was when he's setting after Moss was there, set records, continued set records. Yep. Offense, Gronk, Hernandez,
very
the old
good.
Nine. Not a great defense. Now we're back on year 20. And it's very similar stylistically to where it started. Be
kids,
great
man.
In the spots. I'm sorry?
I can tell you got kids. You just seen Lion King.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Circle of Life.
Be very be great in spots. Trust your defense. Trust your running game. And now he doesn't want it to end in year 20. He wants it to tick back over into year 22.
Right, that's why I wonder if he could do this and be this game manager and if that's okay for Bill Belichick.
Man,
if they're winning,
it's footprints, right?
Yeah.
He's carried that team, that organization for the last 8 years. Mm-hmm. Now it's time that they carry him a little bit.
A little Bible verse.
All right. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.